You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Hello, friends. We're back again. Welcome to Fightful. I'm very excited, myself and Jeremy Lambert. We're very excited today to welcome the director of WWE Unreal, the new Netflix series that dropped recently. Chris Weaver joins us. How you doing, Chris?
Good, thanks. Appreciate you guys having me, Joel, Jeremy. Pleasure. Let's talk.
Glad you could join us. First of all, just for anyone who's getting an idea of what a director's role is on a production like this, could you give just an overall idea of what you were working on for this one?
Sure. So it's sort of a two-prong attack in the way we've done this. And we have a showrunner named Eric Powers. He's sort of like a, you know, wrestling expert, encyclopedic knowledge of wrestling. And then there's me, the director, who's kind of fresh perspective, new. I knew very, very little about the current roster and storylines coming into our series and what was going on with WWE. So it's sort of, we're both sort of side by side in this. So some of it is just semantics a little bit, but you know, we both sort of lead the internal crew here at NFL Films. I do a little more of the communication with Netflix and WWE and a little more of the FaceTime part of it. Eric is very much like the lead story producer and handles more of the edit side of it. So it's sort of interchangeable in some regards in terms of what you see on the screen and who's generating ideas, which come from all parties and from NFL Films in terms of editors, shooters, everything. So director, it's kind of just managing all the different groups on the internal side, but also with, you know, the outside parties of WWE, Omaha, and Netflix.
Now that it's been out for a couple of days, I do want to know like the first impressions you've gotten from people, because I know you've done interviews before, but I think a lot of those were done before the series had premiered. So now that it's been out, like what's been the feedback from everything?
Yeah, this is the first interview I've done since it's come out. And it's funny, I don't usually do a lot of checking social media in general in my life, especially as it relates to shows and movies that I've produced. But this was a different beast. So I must admit, I've been checking up to see what the response has been. I knew that it was a strong chance it would be polarizing in the wrestling realm. And I think most of the feedback I've seen has been remarkably positive. I mean, there's been some chatter here and there that, again, that we sort of knew would happen. It happens on any project I've ever worked on. But I know that wrestling fans are avid and passionate about it, so they have a lot to say. I knew they would have a lot to say or assume they'd have a lot to say. But I think it's been very positive. Haven't heard a lot from WWE about it, but I've gotten a couple messages from them, and they seem very happy with it. But we at NFL Films are very happy with the response, and Netflix has indicated the same thing.
You mentioned earlier that you kind of came in knowing a little about WWE compared to Eric, who was, I guess, your Bible, your showrunner, as you mentioned. Were you ever a wrestling fan at any point or kept up with it?
So, like a lot of people, at least that's a question I ask a lot of people now that I'm, you know, up to my eyeballs in it in a great way. I'm always like, what do you, you know, once I could start sort of telling friends and family what the project was, I would ask people, what do you know about wrestling? Just like you're asking me. And like a lot of people I talked to, when I was very young, it was sort of part of what was on in my world. I wasn't like a diehard fan, but I grew up in the 80s. So very much when Hogan, Warrior, and the biggest, you know, when they sort of lifted all boats back then. So I knew a little bit about it, knew a lot of the characters from back then. Didn't stick with it very, very much. And then I guess during the Attitude Era, it sort of came back into my horizon in terms of The Rock and Stone Cold. I grew up in Texas. And so, you know, Stone Cold being from there, it sort of moved the needle a little differently. So I knew about it, but I wasn't watching it. So that's a long way of saying watched it quite a bit as a kid, or a fair amount when I was a kid, and sort of went away from it. And then again, once this sort of came into our you know, sphere. It was like, you know, I really wanted to do the project and was very vocal about it, like, I want to be on this. And I think it was kind of like, let's do this, this pairing with him and Eric. It's a great way to have, you know, again, a fresh perspective with me and a long time, you know, encyclopedic knowledge of the business and, you know, WWE.
So taking, if you don't mind a follow up, just taking into account your past fandom and going into now, what did you know about the backstage workings of the wrestling business going into this, and kind of what's changed in your perspective since you've kind of put yourself back in there?
What did I know? The answer that, you know, for part one there is I knew very little. I didn't know all here. I think my knowledge of WWE was I had a tremendous amount of respect for the organization, the company, because I knew how important they'd made wrestling. And I was very impressed with that. Even as an outsider, not watching, I sort of knew what was going on in that regard, like how big it had become and how successful they had made it. But as far as the workings go, I knew very, very little. What have I learned or what's changed? I mean, a lot. So it's a little hard to just to put tie a bow around it, except to say, like, one of the things that jumped out at me really quickly was how this is just episodic dramatic television. You know, it's like, it's not, they don't view it very differently than, you know, the Sopranos writers and producers, or name a show, you know, Game of Thrones. So it's just episodic television. The difference is it's every stinking week. Like, it's just relentless. And again, that's something I learned. I don't even think I realized how many shows they put on a year and how there's really not a break in it. It is every week, at least two shows a week. Often there's a third show on a Saturday or Sunday with the PLEs. So I learned a lot, but that was one of the things that jumped out at me really early, was like, they treat it just like episodic television. They go into a room, they write a show, and they have to just, you know, sort of choreograph the matches, but it's built around story, which is the other thing I knew about. Like, I knew they were really good at storytelling, and I had a tremendous amount of respect for that. I mean, that's what we do here at NFL Films. It's what I've been doing here for almost 25 years. Like, we're storytellers. And so we walked right in with a very good understanding of what they were doing. And we meshed really well with WWE in terms of being storytellers in the entertainment business, in the television business. So it's been a really good marriage with them.
So that actually sets me up for the question I was going to ask. When it comes to stories, NFL Films, I love the Hard Knocks series. I love receivers, quarterbacks on Netflix. NBA has a series, really great documentaries on that. But the stories almost tell themselves on that, where, you know, with Hard Knocks, it's like, all right, maybe it's a position battle, whatever the star player is going to do, whatever the overarching story is for the team going into the season of based on their last season. With WWE, it is a television show. There are stories on the screen. And now you're also telling some of these stories behind the scenes. So I guess my question is, does WWE kind of tell you, hey, we want to focus on this stuff because this is what we're going to do? Or is there still an organic feel to everything behind the scenes and what you're putting out there?
It was very much us telling them what we thought would be good for this series, and them saying, you know, they would give feedback on that. I don't recall there was maybe an instance or two where they were like, you might want to do this. Like, it's sort of, you know, they, you know, not a black and white, John Cena is going to turn heel. You know, it's not like that. Or, you know, Jey Uso is going to win the Rumble. It was just kind of like, you know, you might consider following this person a little more than you might have thought, kind of deal. It would sort of allude to stuff. But it was very much us saying, here are the characters we liked, we think can make a good television show. They're entertaining. And then we would, as we learned a little bit more about what their creative would be and their story arcs for the longer view, we would adapt and adjust. Some people would come off the board, you know, like, you know, injury. Jade gets hurt. Well, we know we're not going to be trying to follow Jade for, you know, at least until she comes back. So it was very much us making these, like, here's what we would like to do. And almost every single time it was sure, or consider this also, but they didn't really push us in any direction on who to follow or what to shoot.
When telling the story of characters versus players, okay, the people who are playing these roles on TV, what was there a big importance in getting the stories about, there was a lot of talk about mental health, for example. Was that one of the things that was kind of the hope in getting this type of documentary out there, kind of humanizing characters while following them? Talk to me about kind of putting together that process and the way the characters and the players kind of tried to separate themselves.
Yeah, we always aimed to show the more human side of the character, right? meaning, again, you know, Jeremy talked about quarterback, receiver. I worked a lot on those shows. You know, it's the same thing. We want to see Patrick Mahomes behind the scenes with his family being Patrick Mahomes instead of just the quarterback out on the field. So we sort of took that approach to the point that even in the edits, like in our first few shoots, as we were editing them and sort of trying to demonstrate, here's Rhea Ripley, you know, and here, you know, here's Demity Bennett and here's Rhea Ripley. And we would sort of try to tell their story. And it became, it was something I had never thought about until we started editing. It's like, Jesus, we have these, call it five characters, but then they have a character to their human side. So you're really covering like 10 characters, and it gets very just dense and can be very, can get murky. So I started, as we were getting in early cuts, the message to the editor sort of became, focus on the human side first. We care more about Demity Bennett, let's say, than Rhea Ripley's rivalry versus Liv Morgan. We need to explain this rivalry and this sort of love triangle with her, Dom, and Liv. But at the same time, we want more of the Demity Bennett perspective more than we did the Rhea Ripley storyline. And I was always of the opinion, lean into the human side. We want Phil Brooks. Let somebody else say, wait, I want to hear more about CM Punk, like internally in notes, and then we can give more of that detail. So we, to answer your question, I think the short answer is we wanted to lean into the human side for sure. You know, show an audience why they, you know, they should care about these characters, and hopefully we achieve that.
Is there a set balance on kind of hardcore fan to casual fan? And what I mean by that is, I don't know if it's 50-50, if it's 60-40 of, all right, we know the hardcore fans, they know all of this stuff. But the episode where John Cena turns heel, like the first half of that episode explains basically what a heel is, what the character does, why a turn is such a big deal. And as a hardcore fan, we're sitting there like, yeah, I know that. But we understand, like, the casual fan has to understand that. So, yeah, is there, like, a set balance on, all right, we got to lean into the casual fan 30% of the time, the hardcore fan 70% of the time?
It's a great question. There's not, like, a number I would attach to it, per se, but I would say that the casual fan or the even newcomer or non-fan, if you will, is sort of a priority. At least that's the way I treated the show. I know, again, through history and working with Netflix on the quarterback and receiver show, they want to make sure that a newcomer can come in and feel comfortable watching a show. Like, that's a priority. So we got it. But that's where, again, having Eric sort of on, you know, one side of the spectrum, he was very good at just sort of pointing out, you know, this is good red meat for the big, you know, the avid fans. And so he was very much kind of taking, you know, keeping us honest on what fans might want to see and how they might react to something. And then I was always kind of the fresh perspective and going, well, this might get complicated because these storylines, like, that was something we learned along the way, is the minute you start to explain a storyline in this world, you find yourself having to veer off into multiple facets, and it can get very complicated. And again, very dense, very murky. So trying to streamline a story was very much a priority for me to say, look, you can talk about this love triangle, but then you're going to have to, if you get into Dom and where he came from and his dad, like, you could, it just can go in a million different directions, which you don't really want to do. At least I don't want to do that. So I'm veering off a little bit, except to say that the non-fan was very much in our mindset, but we didn't want to alienate the avids either. And I think, I hope we balance that out pretty well.
One group you didn't alienate were music fans. There were a lot of really interesting musical choices, picking a Bob Dylan song for the Saturday Night's Main Event montage, the Billie Eilish song for the Women's Royal Rumble, KOD by J. Cole for the Bianca Belair introduction. What went into some of the decisions for music? And also, you're using some heavy hitters. So how was the process of just getting all that secured and put into a show like this?
So the ideas for what songs to use come from different people and different parts of our organization. Like, I think, you know, and it's hard to even remember all of it, but I know, like, Eric Powers, he chose the Billie Eilish song, like, out of the ether, was like, said, hey, told the editor who edited that Rumble section, the Women's Rumble section, try this, see if it works. Loved it. It was awesome. The editor absolutely crushed that one, as far as I'm concerned. I think that same editor, I think he might have suggested the Dylan song, and we kind of signed off on it. Whereas, like, I don't even remember where the Bianca, where we came up with that song. I don't even remember if the editor came up with that. But, like, the Shaboozy song that ends WrestleMania Vegas, that was one I came up with, just kind of thinking about them leaving Vegas, but not really leaving Vegas because they got to turn around the next night and go to Raw. And I sort of, there's a lot of different ways to cut a scene or film a scene and you know, bring it all together. But that was one, like, I sort of had an idea of how to handle it and use that song. So we brought in the song, shot it, did it the way I wanted to sort of create that scene. And we had told Hunter, we want to follow you out to get you to explain this and that. And so that one sort of came together that way. Now we have a music clearance department here that handled all that, you know, Layden and Christine Black and a few people that work underneath her. So we do that all the time with NFL films. They're very good and very good at doing it quickly, which is not easy to do with the music business. But because we do it so much on a show like Hard Knocks, where you're doing it week to week, and we kind of tell them, hey, here's songs we're considering, so they can sort of start the clearance process. And then some of them, are unclearable. Like the artist says no, or sometimes the money just doesn't line up. But they do a really good job of pre-clearing stuff for us and researching it. And then when the time comes, we say, yep, we're keeping this in. Let's go for it.
I just want to add, having your ears perk up listening to one guy beat up another guy to a Bob Dylan track is a very special moment. So thank you for that.
It's funny. We always try to come up with different ways to do things. And especially this, we're going to show a lot of matches. How do we make them different? And music's one way to do that. And I'm a huge music nerd. I love music. I go to a lot of concerts, at least used to. So I love the music part of making films. And I think, and even like, there's like a classical piece when we introduced Cody and he said his daughter compared it to dancing. And that was that the editor who did that is a young producer here named Ty Schatt. That was his idea. He came up with it and used like sort of a stock piece of music first. And then we have our own in-house composer. His name is Dave Robideau, who we use for, he's done some of the most classic modern NFL films music. He came in and created a theme package.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
For us, and we would sort of take, a classical song that we had as a temporary and take the theme that he created for the whole series and then kind of implement it into that. And so that's another sort of leg in the whole, when you're talking music, the commercial music that you describe, but also the composer loved the music. I loved the music for this series, which it's very tricky sometimes to decide what sound goes with your series and your movie and your film. And I sort of gave him very loose direction, Eric, and I gave him loose direction. And he, like, first pass, he sent us, we were like, this is really good. And we're like, keep going, just keep writing a lot more of this and we'll start editing with it.
You may have influenced WWE using Shaboozy because they used the same song for their John Cena and Cody Rhodes video package for WrestleMania 41. So I don't know if those are connected somehow, but you mentioned that you had the idea for Shaboozy there and they use that same song. So we're going to credit you for it regardless.
I'll have to ask. Well, see, I did a show. I was an executive producer on a show about a country music show with Luke Bryan and Shaboozy was in there. So I kind of got a lot more exposure to him through that. And so when I was doing the research, I like his music and I was like, if we can get a Shaboozy song in here that lines up, and it worked in the edit. So that was a fun one.
My last one is, anything left on the cutting room floor that you kind of wish got into the show?
I mean, nothing specific comes to mind. There's always something, right? Like, we shoot a lot in NFL films. That's sort of part of our ethos, is capture a lot so that you have options and you have a good story. And we do leave stuff behind. And I think we captured like 900 hours of original footage just for this series. And that doesn't include any of the archive that we brought in from WWE and old matches and old network and, their documentary coverage. But I mean, nothing specific comes to mind that we left behind. I mean, but there's always something. It's the same thing again with Hard Knocks. We cut down a game and we're taking out stuff that's very good. And it's like, you find when you have good stuff on the floor, that is a really good indicator that you are on to something. And we did take a lot out, but nothing I would detail here.
I've got a couple more. Mine are pretty simple ones. The Usos are in a bowling alley at one point, and this is, I think, this is the second episode about Push. I know you like to shout out the team, so the location scouts. Who was behind that, first of all? And second of all, were there any other really cool out-of-the-box locations that you found interesting to work with and shoot in? And also, like, that wasn't their house bowling alley, right? Like, well, because I know there's a lot of in-house filming.
That's not at their house. It's in Georgia. How did we come across that? I to be honest with you, my memory is, you know, we wanted to film something with him and Jimmy and with Jace, with Jay's son, because we knew that Jace had sort of a history on social media and on, I don't say on air, but like, you know, back when, you know, at previous WrestleManias and they'd shot with, hey, who do you think's going to win? And Uncle Ooh-ah, you know, talking about Roman. So we knew that Jace had sort of a history with fans, if you will, in terms of, you know, being on screen. I think it was just, we had made some suggestions of stuff that we thought he and Jimmy might want to do. And I think they liked the idea of bowling. And I think we just had our production coordinator, her name is Shelby Arrett. She's also happens to be a huge, huge wrestling fan and WWE fan. I think she found that one, and it was sort of a smaller one that was easy to manage in terms of crowd and, you know, protecting the talent from civilians and stuff like that. So I think it just came about that way. Any other locations? I think I'll tell you one that I was extremely happy with was where we filmed the Punk interview, which was a tremendous interview. Like he let us go long. It was longer than we told him it would be, which I sort of take pride in not doing that usually and saying if we want, you know, I think we told him 90 minutes tops, right? And we went over that because he seemed to be enjoying it and into it. We had a really good rapport talking sports. Like he's a sports fan, as you guys know. We sort of bonded over the movie Slapshot. Like he said he compared himself to Reg Dunlop and how he's sort of this player coach now. And so I cracked some jokes about Slapshot. So we got along really well, but I thought that location was like just absolutely perfect for what we were trying to achieve with the look. And he showed up wearing like, it just, I thought that was one of those things that, you know, you try to get everything just right. And you never know how it's really going to go when you're making documentaries and you're, you know, but that was one that I thought we kind of got right. And the group got right. Punk got it right. And we all walked away very happy. And it was one of my favorite interviews I've ever done.
I know Jeremy was asking about cutting room floor, anything left there. I actually want to pick from what made the air. Is there a scene that sticks out to you as something you didn't even expect to be as maybe as important or impactful until you saw it in a final cut?
Great question. I'll tell you a few favorites if you'll indulge me. One, I'll kind of go in order, is the Chris Park scene at the premiere, the Netflix premiere, was awesome. Like we'd scouted before we started filming. We went and scouted an event or two, including in Philly back in October or November, something like that, and spent a couple matches in Gorilla just sitting back observing and not filming. And Chris Park was the producer for one of the matches. And he jumped out right away as like, this guy's, you know, interesting, you know, going to be a great television character. So that scene, and he is like absolute sweetheart. I love showing up to these events and seeing Chris Park. There's a lot of people I feel that way about at WWE now that I really look forward to seeing, and he's one of them. So I love that scene because it's very real. It's authentic. He's racing the clock. He's trying to do his job. And he's like his passion just is very, it just exudes, and it's very, very real. And you're seeing it on camera there. So I love that. I mean, I really love Michael Hayes as a character. And just, again, he's another one of these people that I look forward to being around when I show up to the events. I really love doing his interview. I've done hundreds of interviews over the years with NFL Films here. And that Michael Hayes interview is probably my single favorite one I've ever done. Also, that's a cool location. That was just like a sports bar in his house, if you will, which is all dedicated to the Freebirds and like his history in wrestling. So I really loved the triple threat match at WrestleMania. Probably my favorite match up until the Evolution match they just had with Rhea and Io was amazing too. But the triple threat match, I didn't know exactly what the ending was going to be. Like we learn a lot of the creative as we go. There's certain things that they just keep really tight, even in their own circles. So I didn't know who was going to win. I really, if you'd asked me who was going to win it, I thought it was going to be Punk. And then I asked Michael in the interview, you know, who he thinks the best, you know, who he likes the most to win the match. And he said Punk as well. So I thought that scene and how we unpack that match and the creativity that Michael drove that scene with, love that scene. And the last one that comes to mind is obviously the heel turn. You know, I didn't find out about the heel turn until, like, I want to say about maybe 15 minutes before it actually occurred. And I had gotten word. I assumed it was going to be a Cody heel turn that night. We knew that they were going to have a big show, a big night. And I assumed Cody was going to turn that night. When I heard it was going to be Cena, it was just a complete, like, wow, that's not what I anticipated. And I also panicked a little bit because we didn't have much on it because they kept it so tight. It was literally like five or six people that knew. But once we interviewed, once the heel turn had occurred, and I went and I interviewed, I think it was in this order. I think I interviewed Bruce first, then Ed, and then Hunter about it. And they had all given this really good, clean, easy to understand explanation of how, you know, they came to this idea. And once I saw their interviews, or once I conducted those interviews, I felt really good that we could drive it with just their interviews, which is not usually something I want to do. Like, you need coverage, you need something to show. But they gave such great story on it that I was like, I think we can cut this up and make it work with just their interviews. And I put it in the hands of a young producer named Andrew Cordova, who's very visually inclined and comes up with really good visual treatments and is really graphically driven. And I said, let's talk this through. What can we do to overcome this, not having this coverage? And, you know, we sort of spitballed a little bit around what a Zoom call looks like. And then he was like, I think I got this. And he kind of went off and sort of did a mock-up version of what you see in the final show, and using, like, you know, basically graphically driven treatment, putting the guys in windows to tell the story and unpack this story. So that whole unpacking of how they determined to do this heel turn, it's my favorite episode. I really like how we blended the history. I think it was Jeremy mentioned how we sort of explained what a heel is. And I had this idea, let's do it through Michael Hayes. He was the first heel I ever knew growing up in Dallas. I knew the Freebirds in the Sportatorium against the Von Erichs. I was like, he's a classic, you know, heel. Let's let him explain a heel. Then we can get into, we already had the Xavier interview done when they did their heel turn. So we sort of, that was one very clean episode where it's like, let's explain what a heel is, give a demonstration of one that we captured in December with the New Day's turn, and then unpack this story with just three talking heads and graphics. So Chris Park, the heel turn, and I think Michael Hayes sort of orchestrating the triple threat Heyman moment. Those stand out to me among others, but those three I loved.
And real quickly on the heel turn episode, one, you set that up very well with John Cena saying at the beginning, like, I don't see myself doing that, like being a heel. And then you mentioned trying to put it together visually with not a whole lot. John Cena famously wasn't going to give you anything of, like, you got to watch the television show. So he was not going to address the heel turn. So I imagine that made it a little bit more difficult as well of, well, we don't have Cena's comments on this. So how do we produce around Cena not saying anything? So it was very well done for how little you didn't get out of John Cena. Bless him for protecting the television show.
Well, he was a little more protective of the business. I mean, we're in a good place with John, but we were happy to just get him to say anything about it. But, and that's, you know, sometimes we like to say hang a lantern on a problem. And that was kind of like, if he doesn't have anything to say, then we'll just have to show him saying that. You know what I mean? So we got it, and we're thrilled that John participated, and look forward to seeing him. I'll be at SmackDown. I'm going up to the SmackDown tomorrow night, so hopefully see him and say hi and see what he's got to say about the show.
Well, probably not much. He's just going to tell you, yeah. before we let you go, my only last thing is the names for the intros. Everybody goes through their names, their government names, and all that. Whose idea was that, and did this kind of start off as a let's do it, or did it become a running bit? Like, where did it start?
I love talking about this. So this came about because when we first started meeting with Hunter and filming, you know, people, they call him Paul, they call him Hunter, they call him Triple H, they call him Trips. And I was a little concerned about a casual fan dropping in and saying, and then what would happen is we would go shoot an event and we would tell, like, the crew, hey, you're going to go do this with Paul. And they're like, oh, I thought I was doing that with Hunter. And I'm like, no, that's the same guy. So it's sort of, that was sort of the genesis for it was, I wanted the audience to know that if you hear Paul or you hear Hunter or you hear Triple H, there's no narrator. So we need to kind of, how can we explain that? So I did that with Hunter, and, you know, I did multiple interviews with him. That was, I think, the very first interview. I was like, just explain to the world that you have, that you go by all these names so that when the audience hears this. So we did it with him first. And then it became, I'm like, we should do that with all of them. Let's just ask them and see, you know, what they say. And we didn't force them to give their names. Like, we sort of handled it in different ways. But I think Punk was probably the next big interview we did. And he gave the very, which was awesome. He gave this long one because he gave like, you know, several names that he's gone by over his career. And then Jay, we kind of did him, and he had a little story about how I was going to go by this, and then they changed it the day before I went out. So it was sort of an idea born out of necessity. And I was like, because we had conversations when we, you know, when we put their lower third on the screen, do we write, you know, their real name or their wrestling name, or how about both? And so it sort of came about that way. And, you know, I loved the way it came out. I liked the idea of sort of giving you the character name, and again, just giving their government name to just detail, to add a little more to the human side of this, that, you know, hopefully you're seeing the most authentic version of this, of Phil Brooks, and not just CM Punk. But, you know, again, born out of necessity, but it became sort of a creative way to go, here's this person, but here's also their ring name, you know. And if the show keeps going, I hope we can get, you know, other people to detail their name or get different answers. And like, look, would Penta tell you his real name? I doubt it, but we want to give him, we want to ask him and see what he says. And same with any of these guys. And we did with Hayes, like that became sort of the edict is if they were a former wrestler, get them to do both. And that way you have it, and we'll figure out how to treat it later. And, but sometimes good ideas come out of necessity like that.
You wouldn't have to worry about Penta, because he'll give you like 20 different ring names he's gone by in the last 3 years.
You mentioned that the show keeps going. Has there been talks of a potential season two or anything like that?
You know, me, NFL Films, we hope to keep going. I think Netflix does a really good job of evaluating, you know, reaction and feedback. They do a really good job of seeing that quickly and determining how they want to pursue. So my hope is it'll keep going. I hope it goes for a long time. It's been a great change of pace for me. You know, I love doing football. I love NFL football. But this has been an absolute blast, a great change of pace. So I hope it keeps going. And, you know, I hope there's more for Fightful in the wrestling world to tune into and talk about.
Plenty to talk about out of this. The show is WWE Unreal. It's on Netflix. You can catch it anytime. Watch it all. Watch it in pieces. Whatever you do, take the time to go ahead and sample it at least. Chris, we want to thank you for your time. For Jeremy, you know who I am. You know who he is. You know who Chris is, because I just said everyone's name. Ladies, gentlemen, friends beyond the binary, we'll see you in the next one. Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
There are so many reasons to check out NordVPN.com/Fightful. Let's go through a ton of them. Works on all operating systems and devices, even your router. Protect yourself on public Wi-Fi. Shield your data from snoops and criminals. Add extra layers of digital security to your life with the Password Manager, the File Encryption Tool, the Threat Protection Pro. It's the fastest VPN in the world. They've got a global server network, 24/7 tech support. And if you're a wrestling fan, oh man, are you in for it? All of the programs that WWE runs, you can watch with one Netflix account with NordVPN.com/Fightful. You can get pay-per-views at a much more affordable price. This service pays for itself in the money that you are going to save. NordVPN.com/Fightful.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.